further. About the great camp. Humboldt. No, Humboldt's here.
Legend, natural,
good to see you here. Imperial County.
And
GIS supervisor. Operating Mapping and GIS Commission. Sure. Inyo County. Elkhart County is here. Kings County. And Lake County. Lassen County. And Los Angeles is here, I see.
Yep. Hello, the region, Dr. Valenzuela, and Rio Zona.
Madera County. Marin County. Mariposa. Mendocino. Merced.
Wiedemann.
Modoc. Mono County. Monterey County. Napa. Nevada County. Orange County.
Stanislaus.
Center County. Tahana, Dana. Trinity. Clarity. Can't make this real. Tuami. Ventura. Yolo County. And Yuba County. Anybody that I missed that didn't get a chance to introduce themselves? Let me get introduced. Okay, let's take care of that business. Next up, let's see how we're on time. I guess we're about right on time. Okay, since the assessors over at Shell Beach, along with our assessor and assistant assessor, that leaves it up to my boss, Bob Lisenby, the chief of assessment standards, for them to be welcoming us. So, Bob.
Good morning. Welcome to Bakersfield. As Randy mentioned, I'm his boss, but I mostly try and stay out of his way. As you mentioned, my title is Chief Appraiser. We're dealing with an area that is his realm and not necessarily mine. But today, it's my great pleasure to welcome you all to the California Cadastral Mapping Association's annual conference. As Randy mentioned, I'm standing in for our mutual boss, our assessor, reporter, Mr. Jim Fitch, who is attending the Joint State Board of Equalization and California Assessors Association meeting over at Shell Beach. Nice place to have a meeting. But it is also a requirement. It's one of the two times of the year that the assessor's presence is actually required to be somewhere. The state board actually sends out a summons to assessors for this once a year joint meeting. So Mr. Fitch will be with us here tomorrow to address you, but at the moment he's over there. The other occasion, of course, is the day the assessor turns over the assessment role with the auditor and controller, and he has to be here then. Well, we have a great group of speakers and topics on the agenda today and tomorrow. I know that you will find our speakers very interesting because they're speaking about something that's very important to you. Your interest in the subjects that are covered is what will make this conference worthwhile. Today and tomorrow, we are seeking to educate you, to excite you, and to, above all, harness your enthusiasm. That's a fairly tall order, but I have no doubt our speakers will do just that. They are experts in their fields. As I mentioned before, my training and experience is in the appraisal side of the assessor's office. I came up through the ranks there. I've been with the assessor about 30 years. But over the last few years, I've had the opportunity to observe some of the work that has been done in your profession. And I am amazed, frankly, at how fast everything is changing and how fast the technology is advancing. In fact, this is changing the way you do your jobs. I look at some of the titles of the presentations of some of the speakers you're going to be hearing from over the next 2 days, and I see topics like online mapping, the next generation of cadastral mapping, geodatabase design, GIS, new technology, and I see a profession in transition. I hope that what you see here will stimulate you into looking at your work with new eyes. Kern County, like most of the rest of the state, has experienced rapid growth over the last several years. And keeping up with all that growth has been a challenge to all aspects of our office, especially with the mapping section. We had a number of new track maps, parcel splits, requirement creation of new map books. That's all kept our staff extremely busy, and I'm sure it's been similar. You've seen similar experiences in your counties. However, our staff, I'm proud to say, has still found the time to work on keeping us up to date with advances in mapping software, the new technology, and the other changing tools of your job. they've also tried to keep me somewhat up to speed on this new technology, but I'm afraid they haven't been quite as successful with that, but they keep trying. Thank you for that. But we live in a world of rapid changes and changing expectations. It's up to us to do the best we can with our individual talents. Today we have the opportunity of listening to those who may have a new or different perspective on what we're doing. Their ideas and their experiences will, I hope, provoke discussion later on. One of the most important aspects of conferences such as these is the opportunity to meet with like-minded people. It's good to share your problems and hopefully discover solutions together. Today you're with your own. You're with those who are involved in the world in some way. As we make the most of it, we'll talk to each other and listen to each other. You know, we learn a lot that way. Now I'll ask you to stop listening to me and start listening to those who I'm sure will make this conference the most exciting and worthwhile gathering of the year for you. Okay, welcome to Kern County. Welcome to Bakersfield. I hope you enjoy your stay here and enjoy the conference. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Okay, well, we're ahead of schedule. It gives them a bad day. Next up, I'd like to give each of the vendors time to kind of introduce themselves and talk to them about. I guess we can go in alphabetical order, I guess. Coffee and Cat Solutions.
Significantly is that ArcGIS has become a platform for geographic information products. And what do people do with these geographic information platform and products? Well, they author GIS. That's what you do. They serve GIS and they use GIS. More specifically, an authoring is creating the data sets that you create and provide that environment for you. We also have serving. We use ArcGIS Server. What does that do? That allows you to publish your data. What does publishing data do for you? Well, it adds value to the work that you do. And last, you people use our software. And they use it for doing analysis in the desktop products, ArcView, ArcEditor, and ArcEditor. And also, they use it for web-based portals, being able to serve it up in a public environment or internal. And also, the serving product will also integrate with other enterprise products. And lastly, it's now being used for mobile applications for things like field appraisals, that kind of thing. Later this afternoon, the ESY presentation was about the offering. Maybe that's what you do. We're going to concentrate on that. But we have a special about the other field appraisals of our booth. We're fortunate to have Chris Lascalia here. to present and demo the updated Cadastro solution. And I think you'll find that really interesting. Chris is the ESRI Cadastro Editor Technical Specialist. He previously worked at an assessor's office and, as a matter of fact, as a Cadastro mapper. So he's one of them. So if you have any hard questions, ask him. Don't ask me. All right, well, we've made some significant updates, and so he'll be talking about that. We'll be in the demo later on this afternoon. I welcome you to come and see that, and also give comments and questions afterwards. Thank you.
Thanks, George. Next up, Colin Hobson from Moses. This is their first time here. Yes,
sir. Good morning, and I'm pleased to be here, and our booth is at the back. I'll be fairly brief right now in that I am presenting right after lunch, and yes, it's our first time at this conference, and I guess that's why my presentation is about new generation technologies. And so Moses is a company that produces software for state and local government and utilities. And I guess we got the booths the wrong way around. We should be in the middle because we bridge that gap between the CAD and the SRI products. And then, so pretty much all our customers worldwide have both products in their organizations. And I was looking through your website in the previous minutes, and you guys spend a fair amount of time dealing with that issue. And so that's, in essence, what I'd like to show you when I do the presentation. All our new products, and look forward to that. Feel free to stop by. Thank you very much.
We're way ahead of schedule.
Longer break.
Ralph, are you ready? About a half hour early. Ralph Davis, State Board of Organization.
Schedule has me listed until 10:15, so I'm going to talk really slow. The reason I'm on the agenda every year is because I'm always requested to come and say, what's new, what's happening at the board, what's going to affect you? And every year, about 6 weeks before the conference, I start looking at it, and I start going into panic mode because I don't know. We get up in the morning, take a shower, go to work. That's pretty much it. You know, we do our job. But I started thinking about it, and there are actually two things that I need to let you know about. That is going to affect you in the future. And because I have a lot of time, I'm going to give you a lot of background first. Just a real quick question. How many of you were here when we were using the what's called the Blue Line code chart? You're familiar with that, the matrix? 18 by 24 sheet piece of paper, little tiny grids, little tiny X's that you couldn't read, typing on the side, it was all blurred. When I first came to the board in 1991, about 6 months after I came, I was given an assignment that I had absolutely no idea what to do about. I was hired specifically with the intention of moving tax area services section, which is our unit, from paper into digital. And at first look at that project, I go, okay, I had installed a couple of CAD systems in some other offices, but we'll draw some maps on the computer and that's cool. But one of the critical needs of moving into that digital world was to move away from that blue line that barely got the job done and had an incredible amount of errors built into the baseline of the data. So I started working, teaching myself database programming. concerning with the Ashenscape DB2, moving to 3, 3 plus, and I found this wonderful tool called Fox Pro. Basically, almost 5 years of my life was devoted to developing the application so that we can move from the blue line into what you are currently receiving today. It's a database. Part of the problem was not so much building the application as it was converting the data. Having to manually input and validate 1.5 million records in order to get to where we are today. So the first year we sent the data out, we immediately started getting phone calls because it was all wrong. Well, some of it was wrong compared to the blue line.
It's in the breakout half an hour.
But the biggest problem that we were finding was that these were errors that had been built into the system probably going back to the 50s and 60s. With that blue line situation, once it went into that particular system of information,
I wonder if and Jeff no one said here a little early.
The next year it was the truth. So if it was wrong, it's now right.
I don't know, I mean, are these well, people...
The sad reality is right that the county is much more advanced than we were.
Beats me.
In the 60s and 70s, 80s, the counties had moved into the digital, the electronic information age using databases. We didn't. So there was no way to compare the massive amount of information from the blue line to the database at the county. So once I sent the data tables out, what we had available to us, all of a sudden the counties now have a tool to compare us and you.
I don't know.
And that's when all of this information started popping up as we went along. Well, it took about 5 years to clean up all that information. We're still not absolutely correct, my comfort level for that information is pretty high. There are still some issues, but they don't have to do with actually everything
she can do with the actual information
from
districts. This year and the next year.
That system was built on Fox Pro.
Well, the window.
And Fox Pro has moved on to other levels, new generation, Visual Fox Pro, on and on. Well, as my responsibilities increased, I did not have the time to rewrite those applications into the next two or three generations of data. All of that data is maintained on our network, but at this point, processing it, those applications can only happen on a computer that uses Windows NT 4.0. There are two computers in our office that process all of that information. There were three. One of them died. And you're saying to yourself, what a bunch of bozos up there. Well, that machine dying was a godsend to me. Because they weren't going to repair it. I said, no, you have to. They said, well, why? We don't have to. Because we're IT. We'll tell you what we do. And I said, you're looking at what this year will probably be $40 billion worth of property tax information. Tell me you're not going to fix it. Well, if ears immediately started going up, I said, okay, we'll do something. The solution that they came up with is because they couldn't support, literally, they could not support Windows NT 4 because they have no one that knows how to do that. Their solution was they're rebuilding my applications. My applications are being written by someone who actually knows what they're doing. So the applications, they have moved the database from Windows, from Microsoft FoxPro to Windows SQL Server, an enterprise database. And the applications are being written by a real programmer. This has really been a great experience for me in working with someone who knows. I mean, my knowledge is here because programming is up here. Half the time he's talking about stuff, I have absolutely no clue what he's saying. But he has enjoyed the experience because, believe it or not, for a couple of years I taught Introduction to Desktop Database Management at American River College. So he and I have been able to have a common language in building this, because I know what needs to happen in product, he knows how to do it, and together we've built something I think is fairly robust. I don't know if you've ever dealt with consultants or vendors or someone where you're depending on something from somebody else. It's a marvelous experience when I would go to Doug, and we'd meet once a week, and I'd go to him and, this is what I need. You know, this one little thing is okay. I go back the next week, I ask for one and he gives me 10. Because he understands, he has been able to understand the property tax system. It's been a learning experience for him. And he says, well, if I can do this, you can also do these other things. And it just keeps snowballing and snowballing. Where we are now is that we are actually in test slash production mode. We doing all of our work starting with this year, we're working with the new system with Doug's system. And next month you're going to see the results of that. Now, one of the beautiful thing about what he has built is that literally everything is on screen for us. The way my application worked in FoxPro is a lot of input screens and a lot of reports. I couldn't necessarily marry them together to be really useful to a person sitting at the desk in front of the computer. Doug has tied everything into a cohesive piece of software. My application used 11 tables, data tables, for each county. Doug is working statewide into a single database. It's not broken down by counties. And where I had 11 tables, last county had 23. What we can do, sitting at our desk, is that we can, in one of the screens, click on the filing. All the relevant information for the filing will come up. The one piece we haven't linked yet is when we receive all of our documents, resolutions, maps, legals, everything, this year, previously at the end of the year, they were scanned and entered into a document management system, imaging system. Now, all of that work is done at the front end. When our analysts are working, they don't have paper. They're using the document imaging system is called Application Extender. They call up all the relevant documents on the screen. If they need to, they can print out the single page that they need. So we haven't quite connected that yet. But all of the other relevant data, we can go through the list of tap-trade areas on the screen. It will tell us what the districts are. When we're building a new TRA, it will automatically move all of the districts from the existing TRA into the new TRA. It automatically assigns numbers and sequence. We don't have to worry about skipping a number, or if a number has been used previously, the system will not allow us to do that. We can go through, it will sort the different screens, sort all the data for the districts, giving us TRA's past actions. Available is on screen. It prints just marvelous reports. Well, good for us.
So what does it mean for you?
Well, as I said, next month, and I'm saying this in hopes, with my fingers crossed, if it works right, you will be receiving the fruits of that labor. The last few years, you have, instead of sending out the paper change notices in batches as they were done, we switched to sending those change notices and copies of the maps on CDs, and we cut them down to four mailings a year. November 15th, January 5th, February 28th, and a fourth and final. The fourth and final is, if you find anything, the discrepancies, get back to us, we fix it. The fourth and final is the cleanup final for the year. Well, what you're going to receive November 15th, if we can get there quick enough, otherwise it'll be January 5th, is in order to test this system, we are doing a mock year-end mailing. So you'll receive the change notices, you'll receive the data files, you'll receive everything that you normally would have received at the end of the year. Now, one of the things that's going to be different is we are moving everything as much as we can into the Adobe PDF format. Change notices, you're already getting that way. Our map details, we've been doing sending as TIFF images, but we now have, through the latest version of the Bobcat map, for this Bobcat, I guess, we'll now put out directly to a PDF file. So instead of printing out the digital map and then scanning it to a TIFF image, we just press the button and there's a PDF detail available. That in itself has cut down an incredible amount of time, a workload for us. Doug's new system is so slick, we have cut down our production work in just unbelievable amounts. One of our fastest workers would process probably, if I gave her a batch of 20 filings to process, would be done in a week. When we first tested the system in production mode, she was processing filings, it was 10 filings every 4 hours. Think about that. We may run out of work, sure. So the filings of the map, you'll be getting PDF. The other thing is in the data table, the data table formats are changing. The data tables that you will be receiving, that you received in the past, was a DBF format. The new tables will be an XML. And this is something that I need to let you know because it is a different file format. It's much more useful. It's much, we're planning to be much more universal, accepted across the board. But it will mean some adaptation for the applications on your end. I want to give you as much advance notice as possible to deal with. That's one of the reasons that we're going to be sending this mock year-end data set. The critical pieces that you need to deal with when you receive the CD, either November or January, is the change notices, because those are valid. But consider the data tables as a practice set for you to work with, to play with, find out what's wrong. The most critical thing is for you to use it and to tell us where the problems are. Excuse me. Now, we were trying to test this in our own environment with our users, and Doug was testing with his database book. But the real test is out there in your office. So we just went, well, instead of 10 people testing it in our building, let's get all 58 counties to tell us what's wrong. So look for that. Where do we go from there? Well, Doug and I have been having a sort of continuing conversation for over the past 12 months that when this application is done, what's the next step? Well, further down the road is you won't be receiving discs or paper. Please accept my apologies, I don't know what's going on. Where we are headed, and it is getting a lot of attention in our building, is that for all of this information to be available on the board's website publicly, it will take very little work to take what Doug has built and apply and to put it on the web page. So that when we in our office have the ability to look at the history of the districts, to look at the history of the TRA, to look at the district composition of the TRAs, will become available to you as soon as it's done, rather than waiting for a mailing. We get a lot of calls from various people, the county's consultants. Has this been filed yet? What are the filings for our county? All of that information will be available on the website, depending on how it works, either instantly or no less than 24 hours. So, in the future, we will not be sending change notices. We will not be sending letters of acknowledgement. And hopefully we will not be sending maps, because it will all be available on the website for you to look at. Maps will be probably available to download a PDF format. We are not quite at the point where we're ready to start talking about making digital maps available across the web. That is going to be a major leap and a major undertaking by many, many, many people. So that's what you have to look forward to from us. Look for that CD. If it's not there, if those data tables aren't there in November, they will be in January. But it's critically important that you work with those things, get back to us, let us know what needs to change to make it easier to work with at your end. Okay. The second thing is, basically it's a question for you that I need an answer, not today, but in the very near future. In the past, prior to Proposition 13, up until 1978, when the budget came in, and a tax rate area was split and a new number had to be created, TAS would go through the blue line. They would look at the map and look at the surrounding tax rate areas where it's happening. And if they found, after the split, if they found a TRA that matched in district composition, it was split into an existing TRA. So the growth of TRAs were kept low, because you would use an existing number. This was not a major issue because of the way property taxes were, revenue was allocated back to the districts. Prop 13, 1978, changed everything. Coming out of that was 88, defines the allocations of property tax revenue to the districts. It's defined in how that process works is defined in the Revenue Taxation Code. RNT 95G was established at that point, and it says currently, that any change in jurisdictional boundary will cause a new tax rate area. And it was that way for a number of years. Well, because they weren't being combined with existing tax rate areas, the new numbers, the quantity of tax rate areas just skyrocketed to the point that between 1978 and 1992, the number of tax rate areas jumped from 26,000 to over 60,000. Just an explosion of numbers became unmanageable. At our end and at the county end, it was just incredibly difficult to deal with. San Diego County came up with an idea. Why not consolidate existing tax rate areas that match in district composition with under the condition that the allocation factors under AB 8, the combination would be using a weighted average, and they did a lot of mathematical models to show that by using that, the district received the same amount of money. So 95G, paragraph 3, got entered in the legislation at the request of San Diego County, and we now have a consolidation program. A number of counties have worked with at least half of the counties are consolidated, have an ongoing program that once the overall consolidation happens, for each change of jurisdictional boundaries, the county will submit an existing tax rate, will tell us this existing tax rate area number is a match and we can use it and put it into the existing one, or there is no match, put a new number on it. And that has worked pretty well, but it's the problem is that, as everyone knows, personnel changes over time. So the people that were, you know, really active and in favor of this retired, moved to another unit or whatever, and the new people were not as enthusiastic about it. So it's kind of dropped off a little bit. I have other responsibilities because that was one of the programs that I ran, and I haven't been able to focus attention on it. Well, going back to San Diego County. And Joe, if you want to jump in anytime, feel free, because I got another 45 minutes here. Joe Martinez in San Diego called me several months ago with the idea of basically returning to pre-Prop 13 process. Instead of the county telling us, you know, use this existing number or create a new number or whatever, my assumption is that it's because of the size of San Diego, it has become difficult to deal with, because in dealing with the TRA numbers really is a balancing act between Board of Equalization, assessor, auditor. I mean, there's really three players in there that all the needs have to be satisfied. So what is happening with San Diego is, and I did talk to the auditor, they called me last week. San Diego's auditor is sending me a letter giving me, not me personally, but my office, the authority to make all TRA assignments. Because all of the 88 factors is based upon doing a weighted average. It doesn't make any difference what number is used. As long as the districts match, and then the auditor will do the calculations to get the 88, the new 88 factor. Well, since that initial discussion with Joe several months ago, I've been thinking about it for long and hard. My question to you is, what is your reaction to the concept of taking that scenario statewide? That for every action that's filed with the Board of Equalization, we would find a match based on district composition, whenever possible, assign it into an existing tax rate area, creating a new one if a new number is needed because there are conditions that require a new number. And cutting out that middle process of having auditor and assessor make those determinations, which sometimes do not match our determination. And if they don't match us, we can't allow it, so we have to give it a new number. The parameters of this would be that we would not consolidate existing tax rate areas without extensive work and negotiations. So if it's already existing, we wouldn't put them together. This would apply only to new changes of jurisdiction boundary. Now, this is the question that you need to think about. You need to have discussions with your assessor. You also have to have discussions with your counterparts or the auditor side. I will be probably in January posing the same question to the auditors, property tax managers, for their input. To assure everyone, this is not something that we're going to approach lightly. I want to have some extensive conversation, feedback from auditors, assessors. This will also have to be vetted by our legal department. We will have to have extensive conversations with the state controller's office, because the state controller's office are the folks who serve. My role that I serve with the assessors, the state controller serves with the auditors. So there has to be that conversation. It may come out that in order to do this statewide code, require a change in the RMT code. So it's not something that will happen immediately, and it's not something that will take place without a lot of communication between all the players. But it's a question that has to be asked. My assumption is that the counties are in the same boat that we are. More work is being asked of you with less resources to do it. And this is one way, one small step that we can take to eliminate some of the work at your end and some of, believe it or not, some of the work at our end. Because Doug's system will do this for us instantly. So, over the next few months, talk with those folks that you need to speak with at the county. If you have some significant questions, significant issues, please contact me. Let me know so that we can look at those and try to find a solution that will serve everyone. I actually said there were two things, but I just remembered there's a third thing I need to tell you. Everyone take out a pen, because I'm going to give you an email address, and I want you to write it down. The email address is TASS, T-A-S-S, that stands for Tax Area Services Section, at doe.ca.gov. This is a common email address that most of the staff in my office have access to. I'm the primary responsible party, but there are about five others that have access to it. What I'm going to ask you to do with this email address is, when there is a problem, when you have a question, not a run-of-the-mill question, but with filing 08-012, we don't agree, send it to that email address. Don't call me. Don't call any of the other people that you know in our unit. Don't email me or anybody else in the unit. The primary function of this email is for me to be able to track what the problems are and who's working on it. One of the difficulties for me is that people will contact the analyst that they've worked with before. They know you have a relationship with this person, And so this person is working on something I don't know about it, and I get really, really upset because they're not doing their other job, because they're doing something for you. You know, I don't have a problem, it's just one of my responsibilities is knowing what's going on. So this is the way we came up with being able to track what problems arise and who's working. Once that email comes, I will assign it to an analyst, and then they will be working with you directly. But it's just the vehicle that we have for workflow. If you want to call me, you know, directly, and as several of you do, and just share the latest joke, I welcome that. It makes life a lot easier for me. So those are the only three things that I have to share with you this morning. 35 minutes.
Did you get that email?
Yeah. TASS at BOE.CA.GOV. So
Ralph, what type of problems? I mean, you know, like we're looking at we get a change notice problems, or
yeah, anything that, like, typically we'll get calls as well. You know, on this filing, you did this, and we don't think it was right. You know, we disagree with your judgment. Disagree with my judgment? Or I was looking at the filing map. Or at the your detail, and you missed something, or we think the line should be over here instead of there. Some of them are major problems. Some of them are just really minor problems. It's just a communication tool to track what's going on.
So instead of calling people I used to call, email,
just and. From personal experience, if you call me, I'm going to screw up the note that I wrote on the desk. And I'm going to be, or it'll you'll call me in the morning and 2 feet of paper land on top of that note by lunchtime, and I've completely forgotten it, and I will find that scrap of paper 6 weeks later. This way, it's just a way of ensuring that your request gets addressed timely and appropriately. Because there are some issues that they may be really nice analysts that I have, but that particular issue is the wrong issue for them to address.
How about a confirmed email where to analysis?
Yes. Yeah, that's the process that I'm using. Because that what I do is I don't just tell the analyst. I forward the email to the analyst that says, please, actually, I use the same sentences. Please review and respond. And then there's a copy anyway. You will receive a copy of the same email that goes to the analyst so that you know who it is. Donnie, you had a question.
Calpers went through a consolidation years ago, and we converted it to daylight it was in 99 or 2000 was the last time there was an employee in the auditor's office that was able to generate the report and show the comparisons with the TRAs, and we would get together to make sure that there were no duplicates or unneeded data. I've been told currently she's gone, by the way. I believe
actually, Calvers has gone through quite a few property tax managers since 98.
Yes, they have. But I'm being told now that AFI does not readily have a report to allow a report to be generated. It doesn't have any type of program to allow that report to be readily generated to compare those TRAs. So none have actually been run on the auditor's side since 2000?
Two things.
And I'm suspicious that that there are a number of TRAs that have been
on the basic concept of consolidation, Doug's system makes it much easier. When I was doing consolidation prior to my FoxPro application, basically, the way I found a match was I took a strip of paper and put it on the TRA, and I'd make a mark where all the X's were. Okay, and I'd slide it down so the lines matched, and then I would write that number down. I'd keep going, write that number down. Then I would type up all the numbers, and send it to you, and I go, these are matches. And that's how we did consolidation. In the FoxPro application I built, it would find it in groups, and I could send it out in a report form, a printed report form, but I couldn't send it in an electronic report form. I could send the data table digitally, but no report. Doug's system does all of this, and but my system, I mean, I can get a list of matches, lookalikes, in groups. Doug and I do the same thing. But my system I couldn't put in a series of districts from an existing TRA and say, find a match to this single. My system can't do that. Doug's can. So we can find those immediately.
You talked about going from existing to forward.
Oh, yes. More than willing. And I need to, our office needs to get back into that mode of consolidating existing TRAs. I was responsible for that program from 1991 until 4 months ago.
Shell
I have assigned that to an analyst of the top notch. And will be taking over that responsibility for me. And I told her that, and she said, she's a little intimidated, so be nice to her. But she, in time, she'll be contacting everyone to see about the possibilities of doing that. And initially, when we started this program, we thought, well, we'll just consolidate with the county, and that'll be it going forward. Reality is that a lot of counties go through this process multiple times because it just gets built in that you have to do this. So, and actually, your numbers are so small that consolidating existing TRAs on a second pass is not going to be difficult. But the idea of taking the big picture view of what's happening statewide, the ability to do combining new numbers to existing numbers from point forward without doing a major consolidation in the counties is a huge step forward.
What format are you storing your spatial data in?
Spatial data. I need to step back just a little bit to explain our process. Our GIS project was established in 1995 on the third submittal. It was denied by Department of Finance because we could not justify or explain a 5-to-1 cost-benefit ratio. So we kept scaling back, changing methodology and approaches, and finally got accepted third time, BCP, Budget Change Proposal number 15, fiscal year 95-96. This is a number engraved in my brain. I use it all the time. Initially, we were going to build a statewide parcel pattern. Well, as I started working on this, someone else was doing all of the initial stuff, and by the time I got involved in the project, I took some information from Los Angeles County on how they were progressing on theirs, and I was using some of the statistics that was given to me. And given our workload to accomplish changes of jurisdictional boundary and build a statewide parcel fabric in-house, it was going to take us 876 years. You know, in medieval history, the guilds would start something and the job would be passed from father to son to grandson. That's what we're looking at. It became apparent immediately that that was not going to happen. So what was the solution? Well, as a lot of you know, we have approached you, or you have approached us, as you complete your own parcel base. We negotiate, get that parcel base from you. We do our work, and we will give the TRE layer back to you, so you don't need to do that portion of it. And it's worked out fairly well. How do we store that data? We get those parcel bases in basically in two formats, either Esri or Autodesk. And we have also received them in some other minor formats. When back in 91, when I was hired, I was told specifically that I was hired to move into the digital age. Well, the product I knew was AutoCAD. I come from basically a construction background. Previous to the state, I worked for Los Rios Community College District in facilities planning and engineering. The product I knew was CAD, AutoCAD. Well, the harsh reality is we took a look at Esri that was available at the time, and we looked at Autodesk. At the time, this is here 15 years ago, Esri was complicated. AutoCAD was complicated, but the ability to hire and train staff in Esri versus Autodesk was dramatically different. Because when it came down to it, I could find AutoCAD trained users at the drop of a hat, just announce the job, and 19 out of 20 applied would have AutoCAD or CAD experience. It was a matter of necessity. So the path that we took, and at the time, 15 years ago, the whole idea of Autodesk and Esri talking to each other electronically was zibbity-doo-dah. Well, as time went on, that issue became moot because now the data, that spatial data, can exist in the DWG format, and it will roll over flawlessly to the shape format, and the shape format will move over into DWG. The format that it exists in is not an issue. There are some glitches because nothing is perfect. That's why there's divorce lawyers. But the movement between the two formats is not a question of that. We had already started down the path of the Autodesk DWG, and so we have stayed with it. The native format for our TRA line work is Autodesk DWG. Most of the time, I would say most of the time, because that's not a true statement, probably 75% of the time the data we receive is an Esri shape file. The reality I've come to accept is I didn't care for Esri in the beginning because it was so complicated. difficult to work with. It was a resource hog that I didn't have the money to spend. Now, I'm okay with it. A number of people in our office are trained in Esri. More of them are taking classes in it. And I've come to accept that in the future, we are going to exist in both worlds. We will have the ability to export our data to, I mean, right now we can export it to Esri ShareClouds. But we don't, because my position is that we're going to give you what we have, and I don't want the responsibility of something going awry in that export process. So we'll give you what we have, and you can import it into whatever format, whatever process you need to work in. But I'm not responsible if it got screwed up going across the wire. I'm a state worker. I don't like responsibility. So, Garrett, does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's good.
More than answer your question? I mean, I can go on because I've still got another question.
Oh, yeah. You have to, you know.
Okay, so let me get just one last pass. Any questions? I mean, that you've always wanted to ask. I have two daughters who are beautiful.
Yes, I'd love to know if you have anything on the line.
Not yet.
My phone is on with that whole submitting legal restrictions until you determine that yes, this district will be approved. Anything on my mind to tell us the actual process?
Currently, we do not. What? As I spoke about earlier, our intent is to move all of that information that we have regarding the TRAs. I'm hoping within the next 12 to 24 months to be available on the website. Now, the second half of that, and I think that's your question, is the supporting documentation that goes with it. Because basically what we're working at now, the immediate goal is to have the change notice information showing the splits, the districts, maps involved would be online. The next step after that would be to make resolution legal descriptions, project maps available online. But at this point, I mean, we are thinking about it into the future, but at this point, I can't say when that would be happening, how soon that would happen after getting the TRA information online. Currently, what I have online and have had for the past 4 or 5 years is I only have four things, which is a little pathetic. The first is guidelines and schedule of fees for change of jurisdictional boundaries. That's what the applicant has to follow. BOE 400, which is the form that must be filled out by the applicant. You can't do work without a form, because we're government. Third is the guidelines and schedule of fees for redevelopment projects, which is basically the same as for jurisdictional boundaries, just adapted to meet the requirements of redevelopment project, and the sample map and description of the way we want to see the work submitted. If you haven't had a chance to take a look at that, let us know the sample map and description, see if it works for you guys. Haven't heard from anybody. I hear from surveyors all the time. They don't like my requirements. I tell them to take their business to the other Board of Equalization.
Yeah, you're talking about taking the new change of combining or TRA. Do you have any writing that that maybe you sent to San Diego about this, so we take it to our assessor and auditor as part of some documentation?
Not really. Other than I've had telephone conversations with Joe, and someone in the Hunter's office, I have no idea who it was, because the phone kept going while he was talking, but I knew what he was talking about, so I could have the conversation. But nothing in writing. I could share the letter that they sent to me once I get it. But like I said, I just talked to him in the auditor's office late last week and haven't received it yet. So if you, you know, give me a month or two and then email Cass. And I need to have that because I got to start processing San Diego changes.
Can we also email the task, maybe put on the list for dissolving DRAs with the program?
Oh, absolutely.
Communication with our auditor, and they seem to be willing to take that task on now. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. The thing about that email, the task, it is just the point of entry into the system. Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm done, unless somebody has a question.
Very nice time.
Okay, before we go to an extended break, so we can take care of some technical issues, a couple things I forgot to mention. If you like these, want another one, we do have some extras. We're going to sell it, basically, at cost, $10 a piece. So, let's see Michelle. We've got about 20 of these left, so take one home to your friends. Also, on the table up here, we have one of our Goldhouse Farm donated a box of the little bags of baby carrots. Help yourself. And one thing we're just thinking about is we're going to, this afternoon during our discussion here, we're going to discuss the certification issue. So it looks like basically we're going to start over again on it. The assessor's certification didn't, there were things about our proposal they didn't like. Mainly, they would like to see some sort of test. Somebody didn't talk about required training, but anyway, we're definitely going to have to revisit that issue and come up with a new proposal. So let's start thinking about that this afternoon. Also, tomorrow we have to vote on the Vice President and host of the 2009 conference. So we're invited all the Southern counties to think about who of you would like to volunteer to be elected. Okay, so it's 10:03, so we'll be back here at 10:30 to take an extended break.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Just ask him on one side, so he can grab you pretty quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
Just ask him where the bank is. I'm not here in the bank when I'm here. I'm just going to have to